Good morning and welcome to MTSU on the Record. I'm Jenna Logue. We're coming to you from the campus of Middle Tennessee State University in Murfreesboro, Tennessee, in the studios of WMOT-FM on the campus. Our friend Ken Senny is back to talk about new media and the issues associated with it. He is an adjunct recording industry professor and a practicing attorney, and he took time out from engaging in all of his court cases to come here and talk to us. Thanks, Ken.
Thanks for having me. It's a pleasure to be here again.
We've discussed before going on air just sketchily just a few issues that are coming up in the area of digital downloads and cyberspace music and such. This is not directly related, but it is tangentially related. The writer's strike has been settled that kept all of our favorite late-night comedians off the air and in reruns for so long. And the focus of that strike was how much people would be compensated for the digital reproductions, DVDs and the like, of their work. When it comes to music, as opposed to television shows, movies, and stuff like that, does, without getting into the arcane details of the settlement, which are, you know, varied and quite boring probably, does this represent the vanguard, or at least the starting place, for future litigation and negotiation on these tricky issues of how much we compensate the creative community for the digital reproductions of what they do artistically?
I think it's very instructive to look at the writer's strike settlement and the strike itself and how that played out as far as entertainment goes across the board, not just for Hollywood, but for Nashville and New York, and for any artists who are creating copyrightable works that they want to be compensated for. The entertainment field has been challenged quite a bit in the last several years since digital downloads and the internet, and since the mid-90s, has really taken off. The digital format has created something that we've never experienced before, in that any person can create an exact duplicate or copy of any digitized work. So before, you know, you get a copy and you make a photocopy of that copy, and then if you make a photocopy of that, it degrades each time.
It loses a generation, as they say in radio.
Right, right. And but now that we have digital copies, and anyone with a, you know, $800 computer from Best Buy can sit down and create as many copies as they want, and the 100,000th copy will be just as perfect as the first, or the original even. And so that's created this difficulty with the entertainment industry, where you no longer have a product that you can control by scarcity or those types of things. What that's caused is some great things. We're, as an industry, as an entertainment industry across the board, not just with music, but with film and television, we are having new ways of sending media out and reaching masses of people. But you're also, because it's new, the industry's still trying to wrap its brain around how to monetize it and how to divide up that pie. First of all, what is the pie? That becomes the first question. And once you define that, how long is that definition going to last? Because it is such a new technology and it is so dynamic that you're not really sure how long that definition of what the pie is going to last, because something new can come along tomorrow. Different ways, for instance, what new could come along, different ways of packaging the digital downloads. New technologies always coming out to compress and decompress the files. Bandwidth is changing and broadening. Bandwidth is just the amount of bandwidth tells us how much we can send across the internet and at what speed.
And people want to take up as little space in their computers as possible because they want to reserve room for more stuff that they're going to download.
Right, right. Storage is one issue, and that's the compression issue. Bandwidth is, if you're streaming, when you're streaming, you see your computer says it's buffering. That means that what's being sent across is larger than the bandwidth can handle, and it has to take a few seconds to catch up. Well, as technology is progressing, you're having better compression software. We're being able to package these digital data bytes into smaller and smaller pieces and sending them through larger and larger bandwidths. So when we're defining what the pie is, defining it today may not be what it's defined as tomorrow. And then after we define the pie, then we have to decide how we're going to divide it. And dividing it in the entertainment industry is dividing amongst everybody who's in the entertainment industry. You're talking about the corporations who are a lot of times taking a majority of the risk when it comes to producing works in the entertainment industry. Looking at the recording industry, for instance, if a label spends a lot of money developing an artist, they have their A&R department, which stands for Artist and Repertoire, to develop an artist. They also give that artist an advance once the artist is signed to a label contract. That advance is recoupable. It's a loan, really, but it's a non-interest loan. It's recoupable from the artist's royalties, but if the artist never makes enough royalties, the loans more often than not are usually forgiven. So it's a no-interest loan that the artist really never has to pay back directly out of pocket, but from royalties from sales. So a lot of these corporations are taking pretty much all the risk, and so they expect the reward to be kind of reciprocal with the risk. If you have a large risk, you'd like a large reward as well. And then you have the artists. Without them, you don't have the music, or you don't have Leno's show without Leno, you know?
Right.
So it comes down, and you don't have Leno without his writers. So you start dividing that pie up amongst a lot of people. You have producers, directors, you have a lot of people that you need to divide it amongst. And because this is so new, the digital world is so new, there's a lot of arguments on how to divide it. But I think the biggest arguments and the most problem has come from actually defining what the pie is, not necessarily the division. Because we've been dividing revenues in the entertainment industry since it's been around. Mm-hmm. But we really are trying to grasp what the definition of the pie is before we divide it.
Are there issues that are unique to the visual media, like TV and DVDs, that are not analogous with issues related to music downloads on a legal level? Or is it all pretty much under the same legal umbrella when it comes to discerning intellectual property rights and that kind of thing?
Well, when you're talking about a television program versus a song, there are some legal differences. They're all covered under the Copyright Act. Which is 17 United States Code, Section 101 forward. They're all covered by the Copyright Act. But music is treated a little differently. There are some mechanical licenses and other provisions in music that you don't have in film or television. But when it comes to the digital world, some of the biggest differences are actually driven by the market. When you have, for instance, movies are a little bit different than music in that people will listen to music over and over and over again. A lot of people will watch movies over and over and over again, but music lends itself more to just being played a lot over and over, whereas you'd get a little bored with a movie as much. You know, if you're not going to have a movie running for weeks and weeks when you first buy it. You're just going to watch it probably once, and then a month or two you may break it back out. So there's some differences there. And you're going to see those differences playing out in the different ways in which people are compensated and downloads work. As far as the business model also, movies are a lot larger. When you have a full-length feature film, you have an audio and a visual track, and you have all the other things that go along with it. So when we talk about that bandwidth issue and compression, that's why you've seen so much about digital downloads in music, because a music digital download is much easier to shoot across one song, across the internet to another computer. But we're just kind of, in the recording industry, we're the first in the lion's mouth. the music or the film and television industry is right behind us, as you see from YouTube. You're starting to see that a lot in online posts of clips from television mainly.
It's always more difficult for the trailblazers because they're the ones who don't know where they're going
right. Just
yet. Facebook has launched a couple of new pages for music and film. They're trying to get musician and filmmakers to post their innovations online. I'm just totally out of touch because of my age demographic, because I thought that young people were already posting all kinds of music and film to places like Facebook and MySpace and things like that.
They are. There's a lot of content on Facebook and MySpace, and those are the two dominant dominant providers that are battling it out. Facebook seeming to pull ahead a little bit right now. And there's a lot of content being posted on both of those. I think what you're seeing with what you're referring to there is they're trying to be a little bit more targeted for the purposes of copyright protection and not running afoul of copyright protections from content owners. And when I say content owners, those are the artists or the companies who've purchased the artists' copyrights. So when you create a work that's copyrightable, you end up having ownership of it and you can control it to some extent based on the law. What you're seeing a lot of is on Facebook and YouTube and MySpace and those types of websites, people are posting content that they don't have the authority to post. And so what they're trying to do here is they're trying to create systems and spaces on their web pages where content owners can come and post their work. You're seeing this a lot when it comes to the music industry. Yeah, the major labels used to have big A&R departments, artists and repertoire. These are the people who find talent, nurture the talent, invest a lot of time and effort and some money in the talent, do showcases and songwriters nights here in Nashville or New York or LA and Austin, Texas, and those types of places. The big labels are no longer doing that as much because they've been hurt by people stealing music and trading it for free online. It's caused their revenue to go down. So they've let a lot of these A&R managers and others, they've let them go. So you don't have as big of A&R departments at the labels. What you're starting to see is the labels want a artist or a band to come to them with what they call traction. In other words, they've already marketed themselves and built up their own fan base. So they come to the label kind of prepackaged instead of having to be packaged by the label.
Packaged in terms of what they've been able to do on the web or what they've been able to do in gigs on the road or both?
Both. Everything. That what they're really looking for is, have you developed a fan base? If we release an album, is there going to be a big enough fan base to buy some of it to get it out to others who may not have heard of you? And one of the ways of doing that is through the MySpace and Facebook and YouTube and those types of internet providers where you can go out as a content owner, as a band who creates your own copyrighted works and posts those works online to try to reach broad audiences. You could be a four-member band here in Nashville, Tennessee, and with very little money, post a lot of your music online. And you have copyright protection for that. And once you fix that music into a tangible form, it's copyrighted. You can post it online and reach people across the entire globe.
And the special Facebook page for just for music would give the labels a sort of a one-stop shopping place, so they wouldn't have to filter through people singing happy birthday to you to grandma or cheerleaders practicing their routines or whatever homemade something had been uploaded.
Or people just uploading other people's work and things of that nature. What they're trying to do is create a space to be more targeted. Mm-hmm. And you already see this on Facebook. We see it on MySpace a little more than Facebook. Facebook's trying to compete with MySpace where that's concerned. In MySpace already has band sections and those types of things where you can go look up musicians and bands, and they have these groups that you can join. One of the groups is music bands or things of that nature. I don't know the exact term. But they have those spaces on MySpace where you can kind of target what you're looking for. And Facebook started off as just a college networking site. It was MySpace for college students, and you had to have a college email address to sign up at first. And then it expanded, and you have high school kids, and now it's expanded to compete completely with MySpace, and anybody can join. But if you join with an MTSU, Middle Tennessee State University, email address, you become an automatic member on Facebook of the MTSU community. And what they're trying to do is create a community, an online community for bands that others can visit, and they'll just be looking at bands. They won't be looking, like you said, at somebody who's just posted them singing happy birthday to their grandmother or something mm-hmm. of that nature. So it's targeted marketing. That's one of the things that's exciting about the digital world is we can target marketing as a recording industry or the film industry or the entertainment industry. We can target our marketing. And that's where in the future you're going to see the streams of revenue coming more from advertising than the sale of a product. And that's kind of, I think, the exciting thing. And we need to, as an industry, we need to grasp a hold of that and exploit it to monetize the product. Because the sale of CDs isn't really where it's at anymore.
Well, that leads into my next question about this LA Times survey. No sooner do you get used to going from vinyl to CDs than you realize the CD is obsolete. 34% of people responding to this Los Angeles Times survey say they get their music, their purchased music, mostly from file sharing, and they get it for free. That's how they get their music. They don't buy it. They get it free from file sharing. 28.5% say they use digital downloads. 23% say they get their music from CDs. And the odd thing here is somebody must have gotten their friends together and decided to play a practical joke, because 14.5% say they got their music from 8-track, which sounds like a colossal punk job to me, you know. But that's if it is a punk job, it's a great massive conspiracy. They must have gotten everybody to all their buddies to call in and pull that prank. But the file sharing number does sound legit, doesn't it?
I've seen a lot of numbers that range around in that area. If you're looking at the numbers that the Recording Industry Association of America produces versus the numbers that you'll see some of the online and community groups who are railing against the Recording Industry Association of America, like the Freedom Foundation, some others of that nature, they all have different numbers. Numbers can be manipulated. The thing that's true and the thing that's you just cannot argue right now is that the recording industry has lost substantial sums of money to piracy and free downloads online from file sharing and those types of things. People are going online and taking content that they don't have a right to because they haven't paid for it. And that has hurt the recording industry. It's hurt it quite a bit. And that's something I had talked about earlier about, you know, before when you had Universal who pays money to a group, the group comes in, they sign a contract, they get their advance, they record an album, and the album ends up being placed on some type of media, whether it be vinyl, 8-track, as you mentioned, or tape, cassette tapes, or now the dominant media, which has been for quite a while since the mid-90s, early to mid-90s, CDs. What you had was you had a scarce resource at that point in time. You had the CD, and as many as you produced, you put out into the marketplace. And that's all of them that there was at that point. And then computers allowed us to start downloading those CDs digitally and sharing them online. And it wiped out the scarcity of that resource, which has caused a bit of a market failure, which puts us into a different position. There's two real reasons to have property rights. One is to kind of regulate scarcity. You've heard of the term, the curse of the commons, or it's termed some different ways. But when you have a piece of land, if you were to let all farmers just use it freely, they would end up overusing it, because it's a scarce resource and it would be ruined. But if you divide that piece of land up amongst the farmers and give each of them a plot, they'll take care of their own plot. Right. That's controlling scarce resources is one of the ways that the law has addressed trying to use those resources in a proper way and not ruining them for everybody. The other reason for having property laws like copyright is to encourage people to create, to encourage them. If somebody is not allowed to be compensated for their work, they're less likely to do the work. And that's one of the other reasons. So the scarcity of the resources caused, the fact that it's no longer a scarce resource has caused a bit of a problem and a bit of a market failure. But what we still have is we still have a reason for copyright. We still have a reason for the property protections, and that is to compensate artists, to increase creativity, to build upon each other's works, and to have that type of creativity in the market. That needs to be monetized. And I think we do that through advertising more than through this product model of shipping goods in the stream of commerce out to brick and mortar stores and those types of things. That's an old product. That's an old business model that's not going to work in the future.
That's Industrial Revolution. We're talking 19th century.
Right, right. Exactly. And you're going to have to adapt with the technology. And there's been some in the entertainment industry who've not wanted to do that and who have fought it tooth and nail. But, you know, if you don't like change, try obsolescence, someone yeah. once said. And I think that's appropriate in this world we're living in with the digital revolution.
Well, we're accustomed to planned obsolescence as a part of the consumer society,
to some extent, yes. but, you know, some people would say planned obsolescence is nothing more than a negative term for innovation.
Good spin. Here's a weird one. A producer of karaoke records cannot sue competitors whom it claims are infringing copyrights because the producer is not the owner of the copyrights. So ruled the 9th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals. Cybersound and its competitors produce and sell karaoke records. God only knows why. Most people are drunk when they make those things. Who would want to buy them? Where's the market? Primarily to distributors and retailers, including Walmart, Kmart, Best Buy, etc., for resale to the public. Cybersound says the defendants were competing unfairly because they falsely represented to customers and the public that they got licenses for the use of all the copyrighted songs on the records. So if you get up there and in the bar one night and you're doing karaoke to Frank Sinatra's Come Fly With Me, do you have to pay the estate of the composers of Come Fly With Me?
No, the bars and the karaoke providers are the ones paying the license. I think really what that case was is you have one karaoke provider trying to sue another, saying that you shouldn't be able to do the same thing we're doing. What that comes down to is they, as the case said, they don't own the copyright. To have a lawsuit in federal court for copyright infringement, you have to actually be the owner of the copyright, not just somebody who's got a license to use it.
They didn't have legal standing.
They didn't have legal standing, and that's the term we use. It would be, for instance, it would be like living in an apartment complex and you are renting one of the apartments and you see one of your neighbors damaging their apartment and going to court and trying to sue that neighbor for damaging the apartment, saying, well, I live here too. And you're damaging my landlord's property. You're not the right person to be bringing that suit. The landlord is. Now you can go complain to the landlord. That karaoke company would have probably had more success, or at least understood the process a little bit better, if they would have went to whoever they licensed that from and checked their license and seen if they had an exclusive license. Their exclusive and non-exclusive licenses. If you have an exclusive license, then you may have standing. It'd be like your neighbor coming and damaging your apartment instead of their own. Mm-hmm. If you don't have an exclusive license, then you don't really have standing, and you need to negotiate that, and that comes down to bargaining power and those types of things. From the sounds of that case, it didn't sound like they had an exclusive license, and they were just trying to keep the competition from being in existence, which is, no court's going to allow that. They just didn't have a legal right.
If I were the composer, I think I would just sue for butchering my song grounds of general principle, because nobody who sings karaoke sings well. I mean,
well, you have under the copyright law, you have what's called the first use doctrine. If you create a song, this doesn't come from the composer as much as it comes from the artist. But if you create a song, you sing a song, and you have it recorded. Once you release it, once it's sent out into the stream of commerce, at that point in time, anybody else can then pay what's called a compulsory mechanical license and record that song themselves. So you can't, as a recording artist, stop others from doing what's called a cover version of your work. Sometimes the compulsory mechanical license is also known as the cover license. So you have the right to do it the first time and send it out there. Nobody can step in front of you in line. But once you send it out into the stream of commerce, anybody can get in line behind you and do a cover of it. Now, if they change it, let's say you create what's what is a very, very successful country song, and they decide they're going to cover the song, but they do it as a rock ballad. Mm-hmm. That would be called a derivative work, and they don't have a compulsory license for that. They are not allowed to do that. But if they want to do a country version of your country version, as long as it doesn't change the overall melody and those types of things, they're allowed to do it. They may not do it as well. They may be a bad singer, but they're still allowed to do it.
What if Joan Baez was notorious for getting up there and changing the lyrics of the songs that she would sing as she sung them? And they were, you know, most of them were Dylan songs, and she'd change Dylan's lyrics to make them scan the way she wanted them to scan or to say what she wanted to say. She'd just do it on the spur of the moment, and people would go, that's not the way that song goes. I mean, she didn't change the melody or anything, but I never heard of anybody suing Joan Baez over that.
Well, you have, it depends on what time frame we're talking about. The Copyright Act at one point in time did not protect music. It was protected based on state law, and a lot of lawsuits just weren't brought on the basis of state law. So once the Copyright Act was amended and they started including sound recordings, that was in 1972, the law changed. But you still see examples even after that. One of the more famous examples is Vanilla Ice, his Ice Ice Baby ripped off
From
Under Pressure, Queen and David Bowie, which is a phenomenal song, and he ripped off them a little bit. Some people call it sampling, and I'm in agreement for sampling. There's some problems in the law right now where that's concerned, but no lawsuit was ever brought in there in that case. What you have in that case, though, is a lot of speculation that there was a settlement reached before a lawsuit was ever brought, and I don't have any facts on whether that's true or not, but I would not doubt that that's true. A lot of these things could be friends who allow the other party to do it. Just because there's not a lawsuit doesn't mean somebody else isn't going to get sued for trying the same thing. So,
okay. Here's one for you, a family feud in the making, I think. Sam Walton's family taking on Steve Jobs. Walmart is going to cut their CD prices to as low as $5 to try to lure customers away from iTunes. Think it'll work?
That's the interesting thing that's going on in the recording industry right now, in the music industry, is that because of the digital revolution, as I spoke about earlier, the business model has been kind of blown up. And anytime that happens in any industry, there's going to be innovation, which is really an exciting. A lot of people are talking about the demise of music and the demise of the recording industry and the music industry. And I don't really see it as the demise. I see it as a time of innovation. What we have right now is not going to be what we have in 10 years. But what we have in 10 years will probably be appropriate for 10 years from now. What we have now is not appropriate for right now because it's not working. It's based on a bad business model for the technology we have. It's a great business model 20 years ago. It just doesn't work any longer. So whether this works or not, I'm not sure. iTunes has been the dominant player for several years, and you read a lot in the press and you hear a lot on television about the recording industry trying to take on Apple. Well, Apple's selling the recording industry's product. I don't think that that's the proper way to look at it. Apple is dominating the field right now, and competition is great for that. And anytime one party has too much of the pie, other parties are going to want to try to take some of it from them. And that's what you're seeing with Walmart. Walmart's a big player. They've got some exclusive agreements right now that's taking music away from iTunes. And so you're going to have this competition. It's good for the recording industry. It's good for music. It's good for the consumers. Full CDs down to $5, I don't know. It may or may not work. But that kind of competition and the innovation that's going to happen from it is a good thing. But the fact that they're willing to sell CDs for $5 tells you that CDs are no longer the dominant media that's going to be responsible for the sale of music.
That's what I was going back to. Yeah, it just seems to confirm that LA Times survey that the digital download has overtaken the CD as the preferred format for obtaining music.
I think it has, and my perception of it is the digital download is going to be short-lived.
And replaced by what?
Digital streaming on demand. I've been talking to a lot of people. I've attended a lot of conferences. There was a conference just here in Nashville last year that the World Intellectual Property Organization held. That was based on they came to Nashville from all over the globe. Copyright professionals did, and we had a conference and talked about digital media and how to protect it, and digital rights management and those types of things. And a lot of people were talking at that conference, and I've talked to several of my other colleagues about this, and I truly believe this is the wave of the future, is instead of carrying around your iPod with 2,000 songs at 99 cents a song, what you'll carry around is your cell phone, like an iPhone or one of those types of cell phones, and you will be able to, as compression of digital downloads gets smaller and smaller, and as bandwidth becomes wider and wider, you will be able to just get your music on demand. You'll pay a service fee. It'll be like cable television. You'll pay a service fee.
A flat monthly fee?
I think so. I think that that's definitely a possibility.
As opposed to a per download.
As opposed to a per download. And you won't download any of the music. You will stream it.
Yeah.
And you'll listen to what you want on demand. And it'll stream, and you'll have several ways of doing it. You can do it the way several internet radio stations do now, where you'll pick maybe your favorite artist, maybe Wilco, maybe like the band Wilco, and you'll pick Wilco, and it'll search out music that's similar to that, and you'll be able to stream on demand that way. Or you can just stream on demand for Wilco CDs.
Well, what kind of quality are you going to be able to get out of your cell phone? What about the richness? What about the fullness, as opposed to this tinny sound that most ringtones have to them?
Well, you wouldn't be listening to the cell phone in that regard as necessarily the music coming out of the cell phone. You could plug in your Bose headset to your cell phone. Your cell phone may plug into your stereo at home, may plug into your stereo in your vehicle. For instance, in my vehicle, I can plug my iPod into the stereo and get digital quality sound. There's new compression formats that are coming out that are increasing the quality of this digital sound exponentially, and the quality is wonderful. And so you'd be able to play, you see it with Sirius satellite radio and XM right now, you're already having that. And
so you'd be able to have a satellite radio device in your car, except you would be able to digitally stream the song of your choice or the track of your choice, as opposed to depending upon that satellite radio DJ to just play whatever is on his format sheet.
Correct. Or you may be able to pick certain genres or even certain artists or even a song. If your favorite song is Imagine from the Beatles, a Lennon and McCartney song, you could say that you want this service to search out songs that are similar. And you could be exposed to all sorts of new bands, to all sorts of new artists that you've never heard of before. And for your listeners, a lot of internet radio does that already. There's programs like Pandora and those where you will input a band or a song. You can mix it up and have two or three bands. And the computer program will go out and look through the catalogs and find other artists who sound similar, and you can have inputs into it. I don't like this song, I like that song, and it'll refine the choices that it makes for you. Or you could just play your favorite. If you're a Johnny Cash fan, you say Johnny Cash and it just plays Johnny Cash for you. And as technology increases, these could be voice commands that you could pick music. Driving down the road, just say a voice command, Johnny Cash. You're seeing that in some Ford commercials
right
now.
Some TV commercials, yes.
So I don't think we're too far from that, which will make the digital download obsolete. Because right now we're sending 13-year-olds to school with iPods. The iPod could run anywhere from $40-something dollars from a Shuffle to $300 if it's an iPod, iTouch. And we're sending it to them to school with content on it at 99 cents to $2 a song. It can carry several thousand. When I was in high school or junior high, there's no way in the world my mom would have sent me to school with a piece of electronics equipment that runs into the thousands of dollars. Mm-hmm. What happens if you lose it? I know that you have backups at home and those types of things, hopefully, but if the computer crashed at home and they lost their iPod, that content and all of that investment is gone.
Yeah.
And iPods are one of the most stolen commodities besides music that you can find right now. So if you had something similar to what I've described, where you have this streaming on-demand music, If you lost the device, it may cost you $200-$300, but that's all. You're not paying to have this downloaded content at 99 cents to $2 a song on it. It makes, just from an economic standpoint, the model makes a little more sense. And then what you would have is you'd have the revenue being generated from not just the subscription cost, but you would also have the ability to have advertising. And it's back to what I was talking about earlier with targeted advertising, which if you have targeted advertising, if somebody's picking just Johnny Cash songs, you can go to certain retailers and market that and say, we can give you just people who would pick Johnny Cash songs.
And we can plug your pickup truck.
We can plug your Chevy pickup truck or those types of things. It's very targeted marketing that would be very, very appealing to retailers and to the business world in general. You have the bubblegum rock, and you could target, young children for advertising and those types of things.
You could have
the soccer mom advertising. You could really target your constituents as a business.
I mean, the way you go online right now and you watch, say, Meet the Press, and you have to watch a 15-second commercial for Boeing first, you have no choice. They force it on you. You could have your digital streaming, and the provider would say, you have to listen to this, the 30-second commercial for Sunny Delight or whatever for 30 seconds prior to listening to your download. You have no choice.
Yes, and I think that's reasonable when it comes to, you have to monetize the system in order to make it work. It goes back to the property rights I was talking about. The two reasons, prevailing reasons to have property rights are to regulate scarcity, which we no longer have in the music industry or the entertainment industry to some extent because of digital downloads, or to encourage the creation of new and innovative works. And that's where we need to put all of our apples or all of our eggs is in that basket because
it's
we don't
apples
have
with
the
a
other
small
one.
A.
Yeah, because we don't have the other incentive any longer. And so if we focus on that incentive, I think that we'll be much better off in the long run in trying to monetize this and trying to compensate the artists, which the artists and the labels and the other entities in the entertainment industry who are taking risk and being the creative ones. They need to be compensated so they continue to do what they do. A world without entertainment, without the media that we have through television, film, and music would not be a world I'd want to live in. So we need to compensate those people.
The man who makes the brave new world sound a lot less scary, Ken Senny. Thanks for being with us today.
It's been a pleasure.
This is MTSU On the Record. I'm Jenna Logue. Join us again at this same time next Sunday. Download the podcast from MTSUnews.com or catch us on iTunes.